Fullerton.
So, good evening, everyone. My name is Tara. I'm alcoholic. And congratulations to those who took chips here tonight. Thank you for having me out here tonight. It's always a real privilege to be asked to carry the message of recovery. And happy birthday to the chip takers, and especially to my friend Daniel, who was kind enough to be my 10-minute speaker tonight, but wasn't. And he drove me down here. It was last minute. But what I will tell you about Daniel is I've known him a long time, and he's a very respected member of Alcoholics Anonymous in our area. And by the grace of a loving God and a wonderful program of Alcoholics Anonymous, I haven't found it necessary to sleep with Daniel yet. So that's a big deal for a woman of my variety, honestly. So, just wanted to acknowledge that a bit before I got started. So, poor Daniel. He really doesn't deserve me as a friend. He's a really nice guy. Just a really nice guy. A bit of a masochist, apparently, but he's just nice as can be. All right. So, I, too, love Alcoholics Anonymous. Zephyr, you were amazing. You absolutely told my story very eloquently. I won't be quite as good as her, but I will try not to have you walk out. I have a sobriety date of 11/30 of 2001, and I have a sponsor. Her name's Duffy N. She's got 38 years of continuous sobriety, and I have a home group in Anaheim Hills, which is just the Black Print. It's a big book meeting on Wednesday nights, and I really do love Alcoholics Anonymous. Like, I have a crush on AA. I really do. Like, I'm so smitten with Alcoholics Anonymous, and that was not always the case. I, too, come from a long line of alcoholics, and I, too, was alcoholic from the shoot. I was just chronically ill at ease and malcontent, and just I didn't fit either. And I had these really big emotions, and I never really knew how to quite manage them. And I still sometimes don't. I grew up in a beautiful little city in Orange County. And the name of the city is Santa Ana. Has anybody heard of that city? Yeah, you in the back, you need to work really hard in Alcoholics Anonymous, right? Santa Ana is a city that shouldn't even belong in Orange County. They kind of should send Santa Ana to the Inland Empire, you know? But it was perfect breeding grounds for a gal like me, honestly. I have an older sister, right, who was genius caliber student, you know, and got straight A's all through her scholastic career. She later went on to become she works for the Garden Grove Police Department now, and I have a younger brother who right out of high school did a tour of duty in Iraq, also genius caliber straight A student, and they made me look even worse, which I did not need any help with, right? My dad passed away 4 years ago with 25 years sober, and I am just a carbon copy of that man. And I am what my Al-Anon mother calls exactly what he deserves, right? And I grew up on this street in Santa Ana where all the kids my age were boys. I grew up a tomboy. Those boys on the street taught me everything this young and upcoming alcoholic gal needed to know, which was, you know, how to drink and cuss and fight and stick my thumb through a Budweiser beer can and shotgun a beer, which proved to be very useful. Thank you guys for that. In Bill's story, he talks about who his heroes were, right? Who his heroes were, and they were the financial leaders, you know. And my heroes as a young girl growing up were the gentlemen with shaved heads, wearing wife beaters, with prison tattoos. And I knew from a very young age I wanted to be one of their girlfriends. I wanted a convict at like 13 years old. I really did. And they were my heroes. And so I knew I had to get fake tits for that. But in any case, what I will tell you is that the first time I took a drink, I was 13 years old, and I had the same sensation that you experienced. And what happened for me is I finally just felt okay. I felt a little bit better about who you were. I felt a lot better about who I was. I wasn't so consumed with what you thought about me, which consumed me constantly. What you thought about me was of epic proportions in my life. And I took that drink, and I kind of like equate it to like what the normal person feels on just an average Wednesday. You know, I finally just felt okay. And I drank alcoholically from the very beginning, you know, and I'll just get this out of the way. I am a prostitute and a drug dealer by trade, and I love drinking Jack Daniels, and you know, I won't even call them outside issues. I love narcotics. That's what I love them. And if you just drink and you don't do narcotics, I encourage you not to, because if you're alcoholic, you'll do narcotics alcoholically, come to find out. And so I started drinking at 13. I drank alcoholically from the very beginning. My disease progressed very rapidly. There was never a substance presented to me where I was like, oh no, I just don't think I could. You know, I was like, yes, yes, I do want that. I don't, and there was never that like precautionary measure that perhaps the normal person displays in those instances where they're like, what is it? You know, like, I don't care, you know. If it's going to change the way I feel, then I would like to partake in that, you know. And I was just like a chemist. If I got too high this way, I'd just take something to bring me back down this way, you know. And it was just, I just ran the whole gambit, you know, of substances and alcohol, bad alcoholic. And by the time I was 15, I had a fake ID, and my name was Lisa Simpson, and... And I was such a disaster, right? They called me Disaster Barbie, but I was such a disaster that that I couldn't even pull Lisa Simpson off, right? Like, I got that ID taken away from me at some bar one night because I couldn't even put that together. You know what I mean? Like, just a disaster. And I'll just briefly tell you, a night of drinking for me was I show up at the bar drunk, because I don't ever want to like arrive at a bar sober and then get drunk while at the bar. We called it like pre-gaming. We had to pre-game because I couldn't spend my drug money at the bar on alcohol, right? So we would pre-game, and I'd be at the bar. I'd show up at the bar, and I frequented this little dive bar in Costa Mesa. It was called Club Mesa, and they played punk rock music, and the bouncer was like this skinhead guy, and it was just a fine little establishment, you know. And there was, I mean, every weekend tables were being put through people's face. It was a violent place, and I just loved it. I just loved it. And I'd show up to the bar with some random guy, and I have a problem when I drink, and it's called my mouth, okay? And you guys know me, especially you guys know me a lot, and I'm that girl that I show up at the bar with you, and the bouncer, right, he has a pep talk with me, right? So there might be something to take a look at if you're showing up to the bar and you're getting a pep talk from the bouncer, right? And he's like, Tara, can you just not tonight? Can you please just not, you know? And of course I'm like, Paul, come on, look at me. Like, what? what could go wrong? And I'd be in the bar, and of course, I'm like, you got something to say to me, you're going to say it to him, you know, the biggest dude in the bar, right? And then Paul is dragging me out in a headlock. The whole bar wants to beat his ass, you know. And I go home to my boyfriend, who was not the guy I was with at the bar. And I'd wake up the next morning and telling my boyfriend, what did you do to me? I'd have, like, maybe road rash or carpet burn. I wasn't clear on what happened. You know, and he's like, Tara, you fell off a bar stool. Like, you did that to yourself, you know? And so I'm just a sloppy, messy, disgusting, drunk pig. And I'm just a delight. And you know what? The book talks about me. I am a very unlovely creature in my cups. I'm just a delightful woman. You know what I mean? I'm driving my boyfriend on the hood of my car on 3 separate occasions, trying to kill him. And because I'm the girl that jumps out of the car in the middle of the night, right? In the middle of the night, I jump out of the car, and you're like, get back in the car. And I'm like, fuck you, right? And you're like, come on, I'm on parole. I'm like, I don't care. I can go back, you know? And it's time for that rotation anyhow. Like, you got 4 homeboys I'm looking at already, you know? And so, enough about that. The first time I tried to get sober, my disease progressed very rapidly, and I became addicted to hard intravenous drug use, and that's all I really have to say about that. And I respect the podium of Alcoholics Anonymous. I have a desire not to drink, and so I've fulfilled that requirement for membership. So the very first time I tried to get sober, I was 21 years old, and I definitely knew that I had a problem at 21. And I didn't obtain permanent sobriety until I was 25. And I ended up on the streets. I ended up in hotel rooms. I ended up, like I said, a prostitute and a drug dealer. I ended up committing, you know, I have a propensity towards violence, and I ended up committing a lot of felonies and armed robberies, and in and out of jails, institutions, mental health facilities, hospitals, detoxes, you name it. And the bottom line is I simply could not give myself to this simple program, you know. No matter how great the wish or desire, I could not stop drinking. I could not, I was drinking against my will, you know. And the strongest desire to stop was of no avail. And so during those 4 years, I was in and out and in and out and in and out of Alcoholics Anonymous. And for those of you that have struggled, I can tell you that out on the streets of Santa Ana, I had experienced like every form of horrific pain, abuse, tragedy, despair, hopelessness. But those 4 years of going in and out and in and out and in and out of Alcoholics Anonymous and not being able to stay here with you fine people was by far the most painful times of my life, because with every failed attempt, it would just reconfirm to me what I already knew, which was, you really are just a piece of shit, Tara. Like, I knew that people got sober here in Alcoholics Anonymous. My dad was sober many years here in Alcoholics Anonymous, but I was equally positive that it was not going to happen for me. And the reason that it wasn't going to happen for me is because I didn't deserve it, you know? I too felt like I was past the point of redemption. I too felt like I was past the point of God's love, you know. And I had pretty much resigned myself to the fact, as did my parents, that I was going to die cold and alone in an alley in Santa Ana. And, you know, in Bill's story, he talks about that, and he says, I knew it, and I welcomed the idea. And in the end of my drinking, that is in fact what it was. It was just the whole aggregate of my drinking was either me victimizing you or you victimizing me on a daily basis. That's all it was in the end. And I would pray that God would kill me in my sleep so that I didn't have to wake up and live another single solitary day as this person I had become. And so when I was 21, my dad's best friend, Jeff H., he had 8 years sober, and he approached me and he told me some truths about my disease, about the disease of alcoholism. And I got into treatment down in South County at 21. And that was my first attempt of many attempts. And I was there for 30 days. I was violently ill. I didn't sleep for 30 days. And but the H&I panels would come in and I would hear a message, right? I would hear a message, right? But I was equally, again, equally positive that what they were doing to stay sober was not going to work for me. And I heard them talking about working the 12 steps and finding a God of your understanding and helping the still suffering alcoholic. And I was like, wow, this program's really great, you know, for somebody like Daniel who clearly needs it. Like, that dude needs that shit, you know? But what's it going to take for me? You know, I'm a little unique. And so I heard something and they were like, okay, you need to pray, you know, this pray. And I was like, okay. And I heard, like, I just pick up on weird stuff, you know, and they're like, you need to pray and you can't pray for yourself and you have to be for God's will. I'm like confused, but I'm going to try it, you know? So they're like, you got to pray if it be thy will. So like I'm at this treatment center in South County and I'm like, all right, God, if it be thy will, please send me a hot tattooed convict to occupy my time, to occupy my time here at Casa del Cerro, you know, that will help me. And I believe it's your will. And I would like that, please. Right. And sure enough, there he was. Zachary Michael Logan, and he had tattoos on his face, and I'm pretty sure he had a portion of his gate money left and a skateboard, you know, and I think a bus pass, and I was going to help him recover from a seemingly hopeless state, you know, and thus ended my stay at Casa del Cerro. I don't know how it is down here, but in Orange County, they take that whole fraternization stuff so seriously. They're like such joy killers, you know? And I'm like, just let me live my best life. Stay out of it here. Look at him. Like, we're meant to be, you know? And so it was just a bunch of that, you know, for years. It was just a bunch of that. And like I said, my dad's friend Jeff had, he was my Eskimo. He told me some truths. And so I was in and out, and what happened is on Thanksgiving Day of 2001, I had met some fine people in Alcoholics Anonymous, right? And I knew that when I was back out there again drinking, that this is where I wanted to be, right? That this is where I felt loved. This is where I felt accepted. This is where I felt a sense of community and solidarity. And I knew, even when I was drunk, that I desperately wanted to be here, right? And on Thanksgiving Day of 2001, the book describes it, and I believe it's on page 152 as the jumping off point. And I had had many bottoms during those 4 years, but at that point, I could not imagine life with or without alcohol. You know, I could not. And the alcohol was not quieting my head any longer. And I called another member of Alcoholics Anonymous up on Thanksgiving Day of 2001, and he came and picked me up literally on the curb in Santa Ana and brought me to another wonderful city in Orange County by the name of Stanton, and Stanton Detox. And he came to pick me up, and he's like, all right, Tara, I'm going to take you to detox, but I'm on parole, because that's, of course, who I call. And he's like, so you don't have anything on you, right? Like, you're going to detox. And I was like, offended that he would accuse a woman of such high moral fabric, right, of such a thing. How dare you? Of course I don't have anything. Of course I did, you know, because who goes to detox without alcohol or drugs? I don't. And that sudden withdrawal from alcohol and heroin is kind of rough. You know, I need to step down, you know. And so I went to detox, and from detox I went into a 90-day program. And on my way to detox, I said this prayer to a God that I knew could not stand me. You know, it wasn't so much that I didn't disliked him, but I knew that he couldn't like me, considering what I had been doing, you know. And I had so much shame and so much guilt. And I had this idea about God that, like when we're born, we have this preordained destiny, right? And you're going to be a doctor, and you're going to be a pilot, and you're going to be a nurse. And he just bounced the dope fiend hooker card off of my head. And he's like, That's what you get, chick. Like, deal with that, you know? He's like, watch this, you know? And I just thought that's how it was going to be. I thought that's how I was going to live. I thought that's how I was going to die. I thought that was my lot in life, you know? And I'm so grateful for God's grace and his tender mercy that that isn't how my story had to end, because of some fine people in Alcoholics Anonymous, a loving, gracious God, and you know, some women with some extreme patience. And I went into detox, and I went to a 90-day treatment center, and I got a sponsor. Her name was Lily, and what Lily brought to me at Woodglen Recovery Junction was hope. Lily brought me some hope, and I told this woman, look, Lil, unless God comes down from the heavens above and plucks the desire to drink out of me, it's just not going to work. You know, I wanted her not to get her hopes up, you know what I mean? I wanted to completely disclose to her the variety of human beings she was working with, you know, and the sweet woman looked down at me and she said, Tara, that's precisely what's going to happen. And I was like, oh, you poor thing. Like, you really believe that shit. Like, this isn't going to work. You don't get it. Like, bless your heart, but God damn. Like, don't have any hope in me at all, because I certainly do not. And that is, like I said, precisely what happened. You know, somewhere along the line, very early on, the obsession to drink was lifted. I started to work the 12 steps, and the most important thing that I could tell you tonight is that the very first time that I worked the 12 steps in order with a sponsor that had a working knowledge of the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous, I've been sober ever since. And I endeavored to work these steps to the best of my ability. I didn't come here and become a virtuous type of gal overnight. The program director, I got into Woodglen because my friend Paula, who was a dope fiend hooker from Midway City, she's like, all right, I can get you in here. This is the plan. And Paula worked there, and she had 9 months. And I knew that it worked, right, because Paula had 9 months, and Paula was a disaster. She was even more of a disaster than I was. And she's like, this is what we're going to do. We're going to talk to the director here at Woodglen. You're going to tell him that you're willing to do anything to stay sober, even if it means having sex with him. And I was like, really, Paula? Like, that's my treatment plan? Like, that's what I'm doing? And she's like, trust me, Tara, it'll work. And anyhow, you've done it for less. And I'm like, all right, okay, you got a point. So I walked up to the director at Woodglen, and he's this, like, big, giant convict dude. And I'm like, okay, I got this. Like, I totally got this. And I'm like, look, director guy, like, I'm willing to do anything to stay sober, even if it means sleeping with you. And he's like, come down to my office. And I was like, oh, shit, like, this is happening. Like, damn you, Paula, you know? So we go into his office, and I shut the door, and I'm like, are we gonna have sex? And he's like, no, like, where do you come from? I'm like, Santa Ana, that's what we do. It's like a barter system. Like, can I get in your program or what? You know, and and God was working in his life that day, and he declined. And that day, he declined. I later went on to marry him and have 3 children with him. On accident. So, yeah, that's how that went. And so I did start working the steps, and I did endeavor to work on this 4-step. I changed sponsors, and I got Paula after I got out of Woodglen. She worked there, so I couldn't have her as my sponsor. And I did this 5th step with Paula. And at the end of this 5th, like, I was angry. I was angry, and I was hateful, and I was mad. And if I had met you, I hated you for some reason. There was some way that you had deviated from the set schedule on how you need to treat Tara, right? I didn't have to subscribe to the same method of treatment for you. I could treat you any way I wanted to, but you had to treat me a certain way. And if I had met you, you had somehow deviated from that. You were on the resentment list, right? And you made it to the hate bag. And once you were in the hate bag, you never came out of the hate bag, okay? For those of you that know the term, it's like going into the hat. You never come out. That's where you live and dwell forever, right? And so I did this inventory process, and at the end, Paula's like, were you completely thorough and honest? And I was like, oh, Paula, how dare you? You know, again, offended, right? And there was that one thing that I wasn't going to tell anybody, and for whatever reason, I'm like, okay, Paula, there's this one thing, you know? And I was like, okay, I did this. And she's like, what? What did you do? And I kind of like mumbled it out, and she's like, Tara, just tell me, you know? And I was like, okay, like I did this. And she's like, I've done that too. And I was like, you sick bitch, you cannot sponsor me. Like, how are you going to help me? And as a matter of fact, I think you should leave, you know? I don't even think I should be associating with you, you know? And, but I had a little bit of a different, I had a little bit of a different effect from the inventory process. For me, it was indeed the most liberating step that I took in Alcoholics Anonymous. And what happened is after that, I had like a clean slate, you know, and really what happened is I began to trust another woman. You know, I began to trust another woman. At Woodglen, Walt, the director there, had to assign me a friend, right? Because he's like, he comes to me one day, he's like, Tara, everybody hates you here. Like, nobody likes you. You do not have a person here that likes you, and I'm assigning you a friend. And I was like, no way. Like, I'll do your little prayers and work these steps, but I do not want to associate with any of these people at all, you know? And he's like, no, you're getting a friend. And so he assigned me, he goes, he's coming in today, and he just did 9 years in Corcoran, and he's going to be your friend. I was like, maybe I do need a friend. Maybe I do. Maybe you're right. You're right. I need a friend. And in came Arnold, you know, and Arnold, we'd sit in these groups, and they're like, there's only going to be two of you people that are sober in a year. And Arnold and I knew we were screwed, right? Like, we were screwed. He was a dope fiend from Buena Park and a gang member, and I took a liking to him, of course, and you know what? Today, Arnold and I are 16 years sober, and by the grace of God, and that is an absolute literal miracle. And we aren't. What we did is we worked our ass off in Alcoholics Anonymous. Worked our ass off, and you know, after that inventory process, it was like the slate was clean, and I never ever again had to be that woman that was written down on those pages ever again. And quite frankly, I never wanted to be that woman to begin with, you know, and. Very gradually and very slowly, God began to infiltrate my life without my consent, just by working the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I had huge rearrangements and displacements in my life. And I love the part in the book where it says, most of us come into Alcoholics Anonymous holding on to this reputation that we know in our hearts we don't rightly deserve, you know. And it was there that I was able to let go of all of that bullshit, you know, that I had been clinging to for so long, that little reputation that I had made for myself. And my life began to gradually change. And I remember, too, working the ninth step process. And it's so weird because I too, was like, I have these ones that are going to be really hard and these ones that are going to be easy, you know. And being the good alcoholic that I am, I'm like, I'm going to do the easy ones first, you know. The ones that don't cause Tara too much pain and trouble, those are the ones I'm going to address. And my sponsor, you know, outlined it for me how I was going to do it. And I went to my cousin, and she was 12 years old, and her sister and I were running around Santa Ana together, and I'm like, this is going to be easy. Like, she's 12. You know, how hard could this be? And I laid it out for her, and she began to cry, and she said, Tara, please tell me that you're never going to drink again, because I would wait at the window for you and my sister, because I didn't know if you were going to come home, and I thought you guys were going to die. Please tell me you're not going to ever drink again. And I so desperately wanted to lift that little girl up into my arms and tell her, Karen, I promise I'm never going to drink again. But my experience had showed me that that is exactly what I'm going to do. I'm going to drink again. You know, the time and place will come that I will drink again, because I'm an alcoholic. And I told her simply that I'm going to do everything I can in Alcoholics Anonymous to ensure that I never harm you in that fashion ever again. And I've held true to that promise, like I said, by the grace of God. And I went to my parents, who by that time, my mom had double digits in Al-Anon, right? And my dad had double digits in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I took them to lunch, which was like a spiritual experience in and of itself. Like, I took them to lunch. And my dad was like, we just want you to be sober, Tara. And I was like, I love AA. This is great. this is wonderful. All I got to do is be sober. Yay. You know, and my mom had like an itemized invoice of everything I had ever done since birth. You know what I mean? The Al-Anon in her. And she's like, did you break that lamp in the den in 1991? And I'm like, yeah. Yeah, I did. You know, it was me. It wasn't one of the two that were reading encyclopedias in their spare time, you know? It was me, you know? All of it. Even if I didn't do it, I'm like, yeah, I did it. Add that shit too. Like, I don't even care. Add it up, you know? And so I went to my sponsor and I got a new one. Her name was Debbie. And she's like, Tara, what are you going to do? What do your parents want you to do for your amends? And I was like, Deb, they just want me to stay sober. And she's like, Tara, that is horseshit. And I was like, oh, I got the wrong sponsor for sure. I got the wrong one, you know? And she's like, no, that's not what it's about. You're going to go there and you're going to make it right. You're going to repay all of the money that you took from them. You're going to go there. You're going to work on the weekends. You're going to make it right so that you don't, every time you see your parents in the future, you don't think, God, I still owe them something, you know? And because of that, I got really involved in H&I, and I appreciated what George had to say about service work, because that is, I'm big into service work. I'm big into H&I in my area, and my dad got me into that. He got me involved in H&I at 1 year sober, and we started going into maximum security penitentiaries together, my father and I, to carry the message of hope and recovery. You know, we went to deliver a message that holds depth and weight, and it wasn't even so much about either one of our personal recovery, but we got to go in there and tell them that we were a family that had recovered because of Alcoholics Anonymous. Our relationship was so damaged that, you know, the cops were kicking in his door. He was woken up by loaded firearms by the Orange County Sheriffs because they were looking for his little baby daughter, you know, and our relationship was so damaged that he had to get a restraining order against me. You know, I was not welcome anywhere around them, and we got to tell them that, that, like the book talks about, there are scarcely any relationships that haven't been made right in Alcoholics Anonymous. And we got to go in there and tell them that even in spite of the fact that ours was so broken and so damaged because of Alcoholics Anonymous and because of, you know, the example of you people here, we had recovered and our relationship had been mended. And that was a huge message to deliver to those men in state prison. And I still do those panels today. And, you know, my ego's like, oh, we're going to go carry the message to those inmates tonight, Tara. You know, and I get there and I'll tell you what happens every single time is the message is delivered to me every single time by those women and men in state prison, in county jail. That's my pitch for H&I. I hope you get involved in it. I will quickly tell you this. I have three beautiful children with that program director guy, and we've been separated for like 5 years, and he is my very best friend in the whole world. I love him like pretty much more than any human being on the planet. He is my hero. He's dealt with me for a lot of years, and he is going to be inducted into sainthood, honestly, is what's going to happen. And my babies have not seen me drunk or loaded. I work with a ton of women. I still, to this day, work my ass off in Alcoholics Anonymous, and it's a pleasure. It's an absolute delight. And I love the book where it talks about, like, what you'll find here, again, on page 152, and it says it's the fellowship, and it's vastly more than that. Here you'll commit shoulder to shoulder upon a common journey, and I love the fellowship of alcoholics. I love it. I love Alcoholics Anonymous, and I called my dad at 9 months when I had gotten out of Woodland, and people were getting things. The girls that went through the group with me, you know, they were getting shit, right? And I'm like, they'd be like, Tara, don't leave before the miracle happens. And at 9 months sober, just self-centered to the extreme, I called my father and I'm like, Dad, where's my fucking miracle? Where is it? I'm in sober living. I can't stand none of these broads. I hate them all. I have no car. I have no license. I have no checking account, no boyfriend, no nothing. All I got's the damn program director, you know what I mean? And where's mine, you know? And he said, Tara, you want to know what the miracle is of Alcoholics Anonymous? The miracle is that you've been afforded a couple days in a row in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous to witness the miracle happen in the lives of others. And I was like, that's really shitty. I don't care what's happening in the lives of others, you know? But I'm here to tell you tonight that the miracle is that I've been afforded a couple days in a row in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous so that I've been able to witness the miracle happen in the lives of others. And I'm eternally grateful for that. If I lived two lifetimes over, I would not be able to repay the debt that I have for Alcoholics Anonymous. I literally came off of the Boulevard of Santa Ana and with a purpose that I didn't even know about, you know. I didn't even know about it. And today I have a purpose, you know. And I'll tell you this quick story and I'm done, but I went to Chino State Prison on Wednesday night, right? Daniel's sick of the story already. But I went to Chino on Wednesday night, right? And I've been doing it for like 15 years, you know? And I love these guys. I love going out there. They're the most respectful, decent, kind men ever, you know? It's great. They deliver a message to me every time. All they have to do is get close to God, you know? I've got work and all this other shit going on. They deliver a message, right? They're like in the book, you know? Those that aren't, you know, shooting speed and stuff. But I went out there and they have this program, right, on the yard. And the inmates train the dogs on the yard, right? And I saw this badass dog Wednesday night. I'm like, dude, your dog's cool. I told one of the inmates, I'm like, your dog's cool, you know? And he's like, yeah, he's up for adoption. And I was like, God's plan. God's plan, right? And so I was like, I want that dog. So I got a convict dog, right? I got a convict dog. I'm a dog owner today. This is the first time I've owned a dog. I don't know what I'm doing, but I got a dog. And he paroled today. Mm-hmm. I picked him up at the gate. I did. He's not the first one. He's not. But he's 14 months old. He's done half his life on the yard, you know. I brought him home today. No, I did not. I brought him to the program director's house. I'm like, we got a dog. He's like, we've been separated 5 years. We didn't get shit. I'm like, no, we got a dog. I don't even know how to be a dog owner. You do. Like, we got a dog. I'm like, he's like, what makes you think we got a dog? I'm like, custody arrangement. Custody arrangement. We got shared custody. He's like, that's the kid. So the dog is with Walt, the program director, currently. I'm like, when do you want me to pick him up? He's like, tonight. I'm like, no, I can't. I'm going to be late. You got the dog, boy. You got the dog. So we're sharing custody of a brand new dog. He's like a lab and a mastiff mixed. He's 14 months old. He's huge. He doesn't even know. He's been in a cell his whole life. So he's running into like the coffee table. He's never seen a coffee table. You know what I mean? He's like, he doesn't know how to act, you know? I'm like, Walt, program director, you did half your life in prison. Like, do something for the guy. I don't know what to do, you know? I can't sleep with him. That's what I do with him normally when I pick him up. I don't know. Like, you're on your own. I'm going to San Diego, you know? Carry a message. But all fun and games. I do like what George had to talk about. Like, we are in a desperate state as alcoholics. You know, I'm one drink away from absolute disaster. I'm one drink away from losing all of my children because I know after I take that first drink, the second drink will become paramount to everything else. As much as I love those babies, I know that alcoholism is stronger than a mother's love for their child. And I would not trade my life today. It's so good. It's so good, right? It's just so good. And I would not trade my life for that. I would not give up my life for that first drink today. I would not. But I know for sure that I will offer it all up on a platter. I will take a flamethrower to my existence for that second drink. And I want to thank each and every one of you for helping me to arrest that obsession in me tonight. I want to thank you for having me tonight. You've been a delightful group. Thanks for having me.